Chapter 19. The Bronian king was drawn in by some of his nobility, who this prince had bought and bribed to betray their country to his interest, and particularly a certain high priest of that country, to make an assignment or deed of gift of all his dominions to the grandson of this Gallienarian monarch. By virtue of this gift, or legacy, as soon as the king died, who was then languishing, and as the other periaged, not in a very good capacity to make a will, the Gallienarian king sent his grandson to seize upon the crown, and backing him with suitable forces, took possession of all his strong fortifications and frontiers. Nor was this all. The man with the lip indeed talked big, and threatened war immediately, but the Gallienarians were so unsettled at home, so unprepared for war, having but just dismissed their auxiliary troops, and disbanded their own, and the prince was so ill-served by his subjects, that both he and a powerful neighbor, nations in the same interest, were merely bullied by this Gallienarian. And as he threatened immediately to invade them, which they were then in no condition to prevent, he forced them both to submit to his demand, tacitly allow what he had done in breaking the treaty with him, and at last openly acknowledge his new king. This was indeed a most unaccountable step, but there was a necessity to plead, for he was at their very doors with his forces, and this neighboring people, who they call Magianites, could not resist him without help from the Gallienarians, which they were very backward in, notwithstanding the earnest solicitations of their prince, and notwithstanding they were obligated to do it by a solemn treaty. These delays obligated them to this strange step of acknowledging the invasion of their enemy, and pulling off the hat to the new king he had set up. 'Tis true, the policy of these lunar nations was very remarkable in this case, and they outwitted the Gallienarian monarch in it, for by owning this prince, whom they immediately after declared a usurper, and made war against, they stopped the mouth of the Gallienarian his grandfather, took from him all pretense of invading them, and making him believe they were sincere, wheedled him to restore several thousands of their men who he had taken prisoners in the frontier towns of the Abronians. Had the Gallienarian prince had but the forecast to have seen that this was but a forced pretense to gain time, and that as soon as they had their troops clear and time to raise more, they would certainly turn upon him again, he would never have been put by with so weak a trifle as the ceremony of congratulation. Whereas had he immediately pushed at them with all his forces, they must have been ruined, and he had carried his point without much interruption. But here he lost his opportunity, which he never retrieved. For 'tis in the moon, just as 'tis here, when an occasion is lost, it is not easy to be recovered. For both the Gallienarians and the Magianites quickly threw off the mask, and declaring this new prince an usurper, and his grandfather an unjust breaker of treaties, they prepared for war against them both. As to the honesty of this matter, my philosopher and I differed extremely. He exclaimed against the honor of acknowledging a king, with a design to depose him, and pretending peace when war is designed. Though 'tis true, they are too customary in our world. But however, as to him, I insisted upon the lawfulness of it, from the universal custom of nations, who generally do things 10 times more preposterous and inconsistent, when they suit their occasions. Yet I hope nobody will think I am recommending them by this relation to the practice of our own nations, but rather exposing them as unaccountable things never to be put in practice, without quitting all pretenses to justice and national honesty. The case was this. As upon the progress of matters before related, the Gallienarians and Magianites had made a formal acknowledgement of this new monarch, the grandson of the Gallienarian king, so as I have hinted already, they had no other design than to depose him, and pull him down. Accordingly, as soon as by the aforesaid while they had gained breath, and furnished themselves with forces, they declared war against both the Gallienarian king and his grandson, and entered into strict confederacy with the man of the great lip, who was the monarch of the eagle, and who by right of succession had the true claim to the Ebronian crowns. In these declarations they allege that crowns do not descend by gift, nor are kingdoms given away by legacy, like a gold ring at a funeral, and therefore this young prince could have no right, the former Decius' king having no right, to dispose it by gift. I must allow, that judging by our reason, and the practice in our countries here, on this side the moon, this seemed plain, and I saw no difference in matters of truth there, or here, but right and liberty both of princes and people seems to be the same in that world, as it is in this, and upon this account I thought the reasons of this war very just, and that the claim of right to the succession of the Ebronian crown, was undoubtedly in the man with the lip, and his heirs, and so far the war was most just, and the design reasonable. And thus far my lunar companion agreed with me, and had they gone on so, says he, they had my good wishes, and my judgment had been witness to my pretenses, that they were in the right. But in the prosecution of this war, says he, they went on to one of the most impolitic, ridiculous, dishonest, and inconsistent actions, that ever any nation in the moon was guilty of. The fact was thus. Having agreed among themselves, that the Ebronian crown should not be possessed by the Gallienarian king's grandson, they in the next plus began to consider who should have it. The man with the lip had the title, but he had a great government of his own, powerful, happy and remote, being as is noted, the lord of the great eagle, and he told them he could not pretend to come to Ebronia, to be a king there. His eldest son truly was not only declared heir apparent to his father, but had another Lunarian kingdom of his own still more remote than that, and he would not quit all this for the crown of Ebronia, so it was concerted by all the confederated parties, that the second son of this prince, the man with the lip, should be declared king, and here lay the injustice of all the case. I confess at my first examining this matter, I did not see far into it, nor could I reach the dishonesty of it, and perhaps the reader of these sheets may be in the same case, but my old Lunarian friend being continually exclaiming against the matter, and blaming his countrymen the Salianarians for the dishonesty of it, but especially the Magianites, he began to be something peevish with me, that I should be so dull as not to reach it, and asked me, if he should screw me into the thinking press for the clearing up my understanding. At last he told me he would write his particular sentiments of this whole affair in a letter to me, which he would so order as it should effectually open mine eyes, which indeed it did, and so I believe it will the eyes of all that read it. To which purpose I have obtained of the author, to assist me in the translation of it, he having some knowledge also in our sublunar languages. The substance of a letter, wrote to the author of these sheets, while he was in the regions of the moon. Friend from the moon, according to my promise, I hereby give you a scheme of Salianarian honesty, joined with Magianite policy, and my opinion of the action of my countrymen and their confederates, in declaring their new-made Ebronian king. The Magianites and Salianarians are looked upon here to be the original contrivers of this ridiculous piece of pageantry, and though some of their neighbors are supposed to have a hand in it, yet we all lay it at the door of their politics, and for the honesty of it let them answer it if they can. 'Tis observed here, that as soon as the king of Gallienaria had declared, that he accepted the will and disposition of the crown of Ebronia, in favor of his grandson, and that according to the said disposition, he had owned him for king, and in order to make it effectual, had put him into immediate possession of the kingdom. The Magianites and their confederates made wonderful clamors at the injustice of his proceedings, and particularly on account of his breaking the treaty then lately entered into with the king of the Salianarians and the Magianites, for the settling the matter of right and possession, in case of the demise of the Abronian king. However, the king of Gallienaria had no sooner placed his grandson on the throne, but the Magianites and other nations, and to all our wonder, the king of Salianaria himself acknowledged him, owned him, sent their ministers, and compliments of congratulation, and the like, giving him the title of king of Abronia. Though this proceeding had something of surprise in it, and all men expected to see something more than ordinary politic in the effect of it, yet it did not give half the astonishment to the lunar world, as this unaccountable monster of politics begins to do. We have here two unlucky fellows, called Pasquin and Marforio. These had a long dialogue about this very matter, and Pasquin, as he always loved mischief, told a very unlucky story to his comrade, of a high Magianite skipper, as follows. A Magianite ship coming from a far country, the custom house officers found some goods on board, which were contraband, and for which they pretended the ship and goods were all confiscated. The skipper, or captain in a great fright, comes up to the custom house, and being told he must swear to something relating to his taking in those goods, replied in his country jargon, "Yeah, that's all 18 men here," or in English, "I'll swear." But finding they did not assure him that it would clear his ship, he scruples the oath again, at which they told him it would clear his ship immediately. "Hail, well men here," says the Mojan man, "that mod ix agen, ix all swear men skip to salver, i.e., I shall swear anything to save my skip." We apply this story thus. If the Magianites did acknowledge the king of Abronia, we did believe it was done to save the skip. And when they repricked the Gallienarian king, with breaking the treaty of division, we said to say we would all break through twice as many engagements for half as much advantage. This setting up a new king, against a king on the throne, acknowledged and congratulated by them, is not only looked on in the lunar world, as a thing ridiculous, but particularly infamous, that they should first acknowledge a king, and then set up the title of another. If the title of the first Abronian king be good, this must be an impostor, an usurper of another man's right. If it was not good, why did they acknowledge him, and give him the full title of all the Abronian dominions? Caress and congratulate him, and make a public action of it to his ambassador. Will they tell us they were bullied, and frighted into it? That is to own they may be huffed into an ill action, for owing a man in the possession of what is none of his own, is an ill thing, and he that may be huffed into one ill action, may by consequence be huffed into another, and so into anything. What will they say for doing it? We have heard there has been in the world you came from, a way found out to own kings de facto, but not de jure. If they will fly to that ridiculous shift, let them tell the world so, that we may know what they mean, for those foolish things are not known here. If they own it the king of Abronia voluntarily, and acknowledge it is right as we thought they had, how then can this young gentleman have a title, unless they have found out a new division, and so will have two kings of Abronia, make them partners, and have a Gallienarian king of Abronia, and a Magianite king of Abronia, both together. Our lunar nations, princes, and states, whatever they may do in your world, always seek for some pretenses at least, to make their actions seem honest, whether they are so or no, and therefore they generally publish memorials, manifestos, and declarations, of their reasons why, and on what account they do so, or so, that those who have any grounds, to charge them with injustice, may be answered, and silenced. 'Tis for the people in your country, to fall upon their neighbors, only because they will do it, and make probability of conquest, a sufficient reason of conquest, The Lemurian nations are seldom so destitute of modesty, but that they will make a shew of justice, and make out the reasons of their proceedings. And though sometimes we find even the reasons given for some actions are weak enough, yet it is a bad cause indeed, that can neither have a true reason, nor a pretended one. The custom of the moon has obligated us to show so much respect to honesty, that when our actions have the least color of honesty, yet we will make reasons to look like a defense, whether it be so or no. But here is an action that has neither reality nor pretense. Here is not face enough upon it to bear an apology. First, they acknowledge one king, and then set up another king against him. Either they first acknowledged a wrong king, and thereby became parties to a usurper, or they act now against all the rules of common justice in the world, to set up a sham king, to pull down a true one, only because 'tis their interest to have it so. This makes the very name of a Solinarian scandalous to all the moon, and mankind look upon them with the utmost prejudice, as if they were a nation who had sold all their honesty to their interest, and who could act this way today, and that way tomorrow, without any regard to truth, or the rule of honor, equity, or conscience. This is swearing anything to save the skip. And never let any man reproach the Gallienarian king with breaking the treaty of division, and disregarding the faith and stipulations of leagues, for this is an action so inconsistent with itself, so incongruous to common justice, to the reason and nature of things, that no history of any of these latter times can parallel it, and 'tis past the power of art to make any reasonable defense for it. Indeed, some lame reasons are given for it by our politicians. First, they say the prince with the great lip was extremely pressed by the Gallienarians at home in his own country, and not without apprehensions of seeing them ere long under the walls of his capital city. From this circumstance of the man with the lip, 'twas not irrational to expect that he might be indicated to make a separate peace with the Gallienarians, and serve them as he did once the Prince of Berlindia at the Treaty of Peace in a former war, where he deserted him after the solemnest engagements never to make peace without him, but his pressing occasions requiring it, concluded a peace without him, and left him to come out of the war as well as he could, though he had come into it only for his assistance. Now finding him in danger of being ruined by the Gallienarian power, and judging from former practice in like cases, that he might be hurried into a peace, and leave them in the lurch, they have drawn him into this labyrinth, as into a step, which can never be receded from without the utmost affront and disgrace, either to the family of the Gallienarian, or of the lip. An action which in its own nature is a defiance of the whole Gallienarian power, and without any other manifesto, may be taken as a declaration from the house of the lip to the Gallienarian that this war shall never end till one of those two families are ruined and reduced. What condition the prince with the lip's power is in to make such a huff at this time shall come under examination by and by. In the meantime, the Solinarians have clenched the nail, and secured the war to last, as long as they think convenient. If the Gallienarians should get the better, and reduce the man with the lip to terms never so disadvantageous, he cannot now make a peace without leave from the Solinarians and the Magianites, least his son. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.